Chapter 3. Steve's glad he invited himself along for the weekend getaway. By the time they return to the compound, he feels rejuvenated, and he thinks the others are as well. Most critical, of course, is that Tony's okay. Though they didn't talk of it outright, he seems to be taking Steve's disinterest in stride, though it's also possible that Tony thinks that Steve's being dense and hasn't noticed what he's doing at all, and continues to be his baffling, over-the-top self, which is wonderful because Steve can talk to him about Bucky now. A couple of days after, there's a meeting with Fury and Hill. Tony's interested in taking over some of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s international assets and wants a breakdown of what they can take, along with what other agencies will be grabbing for themselves. This isn't really Steve's forte, but he's content to be a figurehead, sitting in while Tony, Natasha, and Rhodey figure out the actual nitty-gritty. The meeting's at the compound's conference area, and it's apparently a special enough event that Friday's called in catering. "Go back to the old list," Rhodey tells Tony. "The old Tony!" "I'm not going to lowball it," Tony says, pulling his tablet out of Rhodey's reach. "I've already promised to let you do the talking. Isn't that enough?" Natasha's sitting next to Steve at the head of the long table, her own list in front of her. "Would it be rude to eat first? Those cupcakes are calling me." "Today you're the boss," Steve says. "Go for it." Friday lets them know when their guests have arrived, though only Steve, Natasha, and Rhodey stand at first. Rhodey pinches Tony's shoulder until he follows suit, just in time as the door opens. Fury enters first, his greetings perfunctory, his handshake firm. Behind him are three other people, two of whom Steve doesn't know. But the third, "Oh," Steve says in surprise, "Hey, neighbor." Sharon looks sheepish, but only for a second. Her smile is warm as she shakes his hand. "Back at you, neighbor." "Long story," Steve says, when Rhodey looks between them, confused. "Not that long," Sharon says. "I was placed as his neighbor in D.C. to keep an eye on him." "Keep an eye. Spying," Steve says. "The word is spying." "Don't worry," Sharon says. "The only intel I got was on your laundry." "We can learn a great deal from laundry," Fury says. "Well, goddamn, is this a meeting or a tea party? Your idea, Tony?" Tony's head jerks up. "What? No, I'm not allowed to say anything, but the red velvet's pretty good." It's a productive meeting, as far as Steve can tell. He can't follow everything, but he knows enough to pick out the conflicting interests and batting back and forth. The Avengers could use S.H.I.E.L.D.'s assets, but it wouldn't do for them to get too powerful. And Fury's having a merry old time arguing both sides with his former subordinates. Tony, though. Steve hadn't taken seriously his promise to let the rest of them do most of the negotiating, so it's unsettling to notice that he's hanging back, only piping up with fact checks or when the punchline is too tempting to ignore. All the more baffling is that Tony hasn't mentally checked out. Steve knows well enough what Tony's like when he's distracted, yet Steve's handful of efforts to draw him in get no joy. Roughly halfway through, Rhodey calls for a break. Fury's glad for it, descending on the rest of the table spread with glee. Sharon rises from her seat next to Steve to join him, though Steve stays where he is, more interested in getting a loose translation recap from Natasha. She's in the middle of explaining about transfer taxes when Steve notices at the corner of his eye that Tony's also by the snack table. In fact, he's chatting with Sharon, him smiling and her nodding along with interest. She's taller than him, in heels, though she'd probably still be taller than him if they were both barefoot. There's nothing in the sight that should mark it out as incongruous. And yet? Steve turns back to Natasha, who has a suspiciously blank face. "What?" Steve says. "Nothing," Natasha says unhelpfully. "Want me to go over it again?" Tony's current trajectory being what it is, Steve learns what's going on soon enough. The very next day, Tony corners Steve after a training session, this time eschewing casualness for deliberateness. "So," Tony says, "there's this cabaret show in the city, great reviews, SRO. I honestly don't know what it's about, but it's going viral the old-fashioned way, and there have been knife fights over tickets." "Okay, I made that last one up, but here." Two tickets are shoved in Steve's face. He almost goes cross-eyed, trying to read the neat print, but he takes them. "You just decided to get tickets?" Steve says, mystified. "They're both for you. It's for Thursday night." "I can take anyone I want?" "That is the idea." Steve considers the tickets in his hand and holds one out to Tony. "Not me," Tony says, exasperated. "I've got something on, anyway. But these are the good shit. I'm not kidding. You should go." Steve spends a few seconds wondering exactly who would be more entertained by a maybe cabaret, since Steve's not at all convinced that Tony knows exactly what he's trying to show. "Oh my God," Tony says with a sigh. "Am I really going to have to spell it out for you? Sharon's still in town." Steve looks up sharply. "What?" "Sharon, in town. Fury too, but he's not the boss of her, technically, anymore. I got to chatting with her." Steve recalls in full technicolor, their heads close together, dark and fair. "And she likes this kind of thing, so you should take her." The back of Steve's neck grows warm. Tony's mouth quirks upward at whatever expression is on Steve's face, and that's wrong. It's a sweet gesture, to be sure, but Steve has the prickly, dizzy feeling of being caught doing something he shouldn't be. And it's not even a thing he is doing. Steve says, "I don't." "There was something there, right?" Tony says. "There's a vibe." "It's not a vibe." "Looks like a vibe. Your ears are red." "Tony, go for it. Okay? You need wardrobe advice? I'm here too." Tony glances at his watch. "Oh, I'm late. I'm going to be yelled at. Bye." There goes Tony Stark, still a goddamn Mack truck. Steve thinks he should be concerned by the reappearance of Tony's habit of dropping things and fleeing, but no, this is understandable. The gift's made with good intentions, but Tony wouldn't linger. Steve wouldn't want him to linger either, especially not when Steve's embarrassment can apparently be read the wrong way. Looking back on the tail end of his time with S.H.I.E.L.D., that was very much a strange pocket of time. He'd gotten comfortable enough to reach out to people, strangers, outside of S.H.I.E.L.D., hoping for a hit. Sam was golden, thank God, and Sharon was something, a maybe, a could be. There's no question what Steve's going to do with the tickets. On Thursday night, Steve is mildly surprised to discover that Tony's hard at work in the lab. He half expected Tony to be off the compound altogether. But while Steve is in the kitchen making a snack, Vision comes up to collect coffee and snacks and tells him that they're for Tony. They're in the lab doing some studies on the Scepter Gym. It's about 15 minutes later, the right amount of time for Vision to tell Tony, and for Tony to put down whatever crucial thing he's doing, that Tony comes marching into the kitchen. "What are you doing here?" Tony demands. "Don't you have a thing?" "Sold the tickets," Steve says. "What?" "To be more accurate, I gave the tickets to Sam, who sold them online. I think he put the money into his motorcycle fund." "God damn it, Steve." Steve puts his sandwich down just as Tony practically flings a chair into position in front of Steve and drops into it. Tony's body language screams itchiness for a fight, but Steve's ready. He meets Tony's gaze and reminds himself of the obvious. It isn't ethical to accept a favor from someone who has feelings for him and use said favor to take someone else on a date. Steve won't say this, of course, because Tony would get upset, but there are other ways to bat it aside. "Why would you do that?" Tony says. "Are you prepared to actually listen? Because you should calm down." "I am calm." Tony clears his throat. "I'm calm." "Here's the thing," Steve says. "When I tell you something in confidence, it's not an invitation for you to meddle. I am not a problem for you to solve." "I know you're not," Tony snaps. I appreciate the effort, really I do. Not enough to actually use it. Tony, Steve says patiently, what did I just say? That you're not a problem for me to solve, which is certainly a take. Because if anything, you're actually problems on top of other problems. And I have plenty of problems of my own, so if I thought of you that way at all, we'd both be fucked. This, Tony slaps a hand on the table so loud that the sound echoes, wasn't meant to be a solution to anything. I get that you're on this whole turning over a new leaf thing. It's not about me, isn't it? Tony inhales sharply. Steve didn't mean that as a precision strike, but it might as well have been. Tony, staring at him, breath stifled, and a cold ripple passes through Steve with the realization that this could be it. All this time, Tony's been vague about his intentions towards Steve, but this could blow it wide open. Hot on the heels of that thought is that, although Steve thought and told Natasha that he could handle it, it's clear now that he's standing in it that he really, really can't. Tony stands up. Okay, I'm gonna... wait. Fear propels Steve onto his feet. This could be it. But one false step from him would have Tony closing off again, and they'd be back the way they were. Friends, but not really friends. And Tony always at a remove. It hasn't even happened yet, but Steve already misses it, and him. I'm sorry. No, I'm the one who's sorry, Tony says quickly. It's fair. I overreached myself. I'm going, no, please, no. Steve takes Tony's hand in his. Tony's fingers twitch, but he doesn't pull away, so Steve holds it firmly. Tony, these past weeks have been... I'm grateful that you've been able to talk to me. You should be able to talk to me. I know I haven't made that possible for you before. You said you want to be better, right? Me too. I want to be better at this. Tony's throat works silently. Let me be your friend, Steve says. Okay, Tony says, voice hoarse. Okay. They sit down, knees almost touching. Steve lets go, but Tony's hands stay within range, clasped loosely in front of him. I understand what you meant. Steve tries again. But you didn't have to. I know, it's just... God, I want you to be happy. The words rush out of him, low and explosive, as though Tony had needed to say that quickly, or he'd never have said it at all. The fierceness of it is shocking. And it rushes over Steve in a full-body zing from toes to fingertips. Steve's seen Tony angry, and animated, and jubilant. But this is none of that. This is Tony with his emotions funneled into a narrow, tight space, as though he cannot, will not, show more. But the strength of feeling compels him to at least show something. That's pretty much... Tony trails off, licks his lips, takes a steadying breath. That's all I want. This honesty of that rings like a bell, perfectly clear and perfectly recognizable. Tony, Steve says tightly, that's very sweet of you, but no. I know life hasn't dealt you the best hand, and I know it's scary after everything you've been through to even try. You said that you don't know who you are without the fight. This could be a way to find out. It doesn't have to go anywhere because, yeah, that's also a possibility. But I'm just making an opportunity because I can't stand it. This... Tony reaches out, two fingers tapping hard and blunt at Steve's chest. There's so much to give. Steve swallows. I don't know if there is. There is. Of course there is. If I could make a trade, that you'd never believe anything that comes out of my mouth ever again, as long as you'd believe this one thing, I'd be content. Core code. Core. Your core code, the one you said hadn't changed after you became Iron Man. Tony's eyes light up. Wow, you remember? You were right, my code has changed. But I'm making another change on purpose. An edit, if you will. Priority one. make sure everyone I care about is safe. But there is priority too. Make sure everyone I care about is happy. That includes you, too. The truth hits Steve like a punch to the gut. Tony loves him. Tony's in love with him. Not a crush and not some vague feelings due to proximity, even if they may have started that way. Why is Steve only seeing this now? Because Tony's only now decided to let him see it, or at least a portion of it. For he's accepted that he doesn't have a chance. Steve will never see him that way. So it's fine to give in a little and share some of what he really feels in case it could help. It's so brave. Where do you fit in that? Steve says. Where do I fit what? Where does your happiness come into that? Tony stares at Steve as though he's stupid. Are you not paying attention? Those are the two most important things in the world right there. That's for me. So yeah, I'm sorry if I overstepped. Did I overstep? It's okay. I overstep, so stepping back, but you get it, right? I get it, Steve says weakly, and I'll think about it. Relief changes Tony's face, drawing out a pleased smile that crinkles the corners of his eyes. Okay, thank you. Thank you. As though Steve would be doing Tony a favor. Okay, I've got to go, Tony says. Vision and the bots might have started another revolution while I wasn't looking. Are we cool? We're cool. Steve sits back, feeling strangely numb as Tony rises to his feet. Tony's motions are fumbling and casual, but still somehow elegant, with a rustle of cloth that seems absurdly loud and making the hairs on Steve's arms rise. There's a pause, where Tony hovers, as though unsure if this exit is indeed the good one, so Steve meets his gaze and smiles. It's good. It's okay. Well, it's just mostly okay, but that's not Tony's fault. Tony smiles back and, after another moment of indecision, darts his hand out, patting Steve's shoulder. Awkward, but meant well. Has Tony always been this handsome? That night, Steve has trouble sleeping. It's not an unfamiliar problem, though the cause of it is. He tosses and turns, gets up, jogs around his room a few times, then lies down again. Accumulated knowledge of Tony churns around his skull, and it seems mighty unfair that it took only one conversation to give every single moment they've had before a new context. Damn it, Steve whispers to the dark of the room. He'd accepted that he'd left parts of him behind. The burn he'd felt for Peggy was once in a lifetime, which was fine because that lifetime was done and over, and Steve has this now. Steve is here to keep fighting for a world that needs it, even if it may not need him specifically. But then there's Tony, who burns and is bright hot in a different way. Tony of the miracles, who'd pulled another miracle out from a dried-up husk of a man who thought he'd had everything about himself figured out. Steve's heart can still beat like this. He had no idea. He thought it was all gone. Holy shit. Sam knows something's up, not even 5 minutes after Steve sat down for breakfast. Natasha, who's already there next to Sam, is presumed to know everything. Steve could be self-conscious, but what would be the point? His head is barely able to hold the massive idea that Tony loves him, and Steve could very well be capable of loving him back. So what does he care for the fact that Sam and Natasha are exchanging looks right there, where they know he can see? Steve has his cereal, coffee, and a tablet set to the morning news, as is his usual. Around him, Sam and Natasha exchange small talk about their plans for the day, the status of an ongoing investigation they're looking into, and Sam's defense in the face of Natasha's critique of his outfit's color coordination. Steve hears Tony's voice before they do. Enhanced hearing, but it could just be that every nerve in Steve's body is on high alert. Are you having a heart attack? Sam says. Can you have a heart attack? I've seen him get electrocuted. Natasha says. So the answer to the second one is yes. Steve keeps his head down. I'm trying to read, thank you. Tony is coming up the stairs, and a few seconds later, he and Rhodey come through the doors. They're both in workout clothes, apparently having come up from the gym, and are talking shit, as they normally do, but Steve isn't really listening. Steve lifts his cup halfway to his face, all the better to hide behind, and refocuses his eyes on the tablet. He's pretty sure he read that headline already, but he'd better read it again to be sure. Tony laughs, probably at something Rhodey said. Apparently Steve's willpower only goes so far because his gaze drifts again, sliding across the table and upward to where Tony's mixing something at the counter, one of his smoothies, no doubt. Steve's seen these clothes before. Tony wears them all the time for gym and hand-to-hand, i.e., dark tank top, gray stretch pants. Tank top that shows off his strong mechanics arms, notches of muscle along the length from shoulder to elbow to wrist. Stretch pants that follow the very picturesque curve of Tony's ass, and somehow managing to suggest both firmness and softness of the shape. When Tony tilts his head, the muscles in his neck tense, move in a particular way, suggesting a distinct texture of skin that has Steve's fingers twitching. Arousal flickers low in Steve's body. All right, there it is. That's good to know. And yet, he could not have possibly chosen a worse time to seek confirmation for this, at the communal table, with other people nearby, and Tony functionally 2 million miles away and hideously attractive, despite the post-gym sweat and flush of his skin. Steve inhales slowly through his mouth, air rushing over his teeth, and wills himself not to get hard. Seriously, man, Sam says, scooting closer, if you're gonna... Steve panics, hand jerking sideways. Wow. Sam blinks down at his shirt, the dark blue synthetic fibers now stained with Steve's latte. You are gonna pay for that. I know, Steve says quickly. I know, and I deserve it. Sam raises an eyebrow. But not right now? Not right now. Tony and Rhodey are looking their way, wearing near identical expressions of unimpressed confusion. Tony pops the lid off the blender and dumps the lot into his extra-large bright red Stark tumbler, which he then taps Rhodey on the arm with. Let's get out of here, Tony says. They're being all three musketeery. Steve relaxes a tiny fraction when the pair disappear down the hallway. Did you know your coffee had gotten cold? Natasha says. Of course I did, Steve says, affronted. It's not cold, Sam says, as he peels off his shirt. Lukewarm, which is concerning enough that I'm going to hold this over your head for as long as possible and pull it out when you least expect it. That okay with you? Steve deflates and holds his hand out to take Sam's soiled shirt. Yeah. Tony, huh? Sam says. Steve deflates even more, sinking into his seat. Yeah. Stranger things have happened. Natasha says that so casually as if none of this matters to her, and that she hasn't known for a long time that... Tony talks to you about me, Steve says suddenly. I talk to lots of people about you, Natasha says. No, Tony talks to you about me. Natasha hums. Even if he did, I would not be at liberty to say. You gonna ask him to prom, Steve? Sam says, thinking of getting him a corsage. No, I was thinking I'd bang him loud enough to make you uncomfortable. Steve double takes, appalled at the betrayal of his own mouth. Then Natasha just laughs and Sam whistles under his breath. Steve says. You're back, Natasha says. That's better. Is it? Steve asks. Natasha pats his hand. You'll be fine. Surprisingly, it makes Steve feel a little better. Obviously, he needs to do something about this as soon as possible. Never mind that he's never done this before, let alone with someone like Tony, let alone with someone he has an extra piece of information about and feels guilty for having in the first place. Any mediocre success Steve's had in the past has been accidental. So in a sense, this is his chance to prove himself, or something to that effect. After the less-than-stellar morning, Steve has quite a few hours to get his game plan together, in between other day appointments in the city. Ideally, he would take more than a few hours or even a few days. But the timing is already all off. Tony's had this for so long, and Steve knows too well the dangers of not taking the chance while it's still within reach. By the time he returns to the compound, he's not ready exactly, but that's okay. He'll give it a whirl, see where it'll land. Up on the common floor, the place is lit up for the early evening, and Tony's standing alone by the balcony, hands on his hips. He turns at the sound of Steve's approach. "Okay, there's you." "What's that?" Steve says. "I can't find anyone. Thought maybe the rapture happened while I was having a nap." "You napped?" "Napped or designed a prototype suit with stealth mode without realizing I'd gone almost 5 hours without liquids. One or the other." "Tony." "I'm kidding. I had coffee." Tony leans against the back of the couch and checks his phone. All casual movements, very relaxed. Yet Steve almost doubles over from the surge of want inside him to reach out, to touch, to smell. Does Tony feel like this all the time? Probably not. He hopes not. "All right. Here it goes then. Here it is." Steve's teammates are all decent folk who've apparently chipped in to help this happen. So it's only polite for Steve to make the most of it. Steve thinks back on the scenarios he'd painstakingly plotted out today in between meetings with city officials. The best is, of course, to ask Tony out casually, the way he's done before, but with flirtatiousness on top and an explicit spelling it out as a date as soon as a neat point in the conversation opens itself up. "Friday is being so weird," Tony mutters. Looking at him, Steve suddenly remembers that this started with Tony's opening himself up by sheer willpower. There is a pattern there, in that Tony acts, making big, bold decisions seemingly out of nowhere, where Steve's only ever reacted to things around him. That sends Steve's thoughts down another path. What can Steve give him in return, really? Tony has ideas, tangents, radical studies of himself and others that he unwinds and stitches back together in fascinating ways. And Steve has melancholy, frustration, anger, hell. While Tony's told him about core code and ways to focus and how he's trying to be a better person, the only real thing Steve's told Tony in return is that his parents were murdered. But Tony's smart. He knows all of this and more. He lived through the part where they couldn't get along until they did. He wants Steve anyway. That counts for something. Tony looks up and frowns when he sees Steve's face. "What's wrong?" "I know you have feelings for me," Steve blurts out. This is why people say he's bad at planning. Tony blinks, slowly recalibrating. Flight has to be his first response, but seems like he's got a good hold on his resolution to try not to do that. "Yeah, so?" "So," Steve echoes, "it's not a problem, is it? Oh. Tony smiles, which for a half second is much too bright. "If you want to bring Sharon around, it's fine. No big deal." "No, that's not why." "Wait, how long have you known?" "After the Sri Lanka crash." "What?" The tension in Tony's body snaps, sending him bowing forward and over, hands on his knees as he breathes. "Wow, shit. Wow, okay, that's... But that means..." He stands back up and points accusingly at Steve. "It means you're fine. You haven't been avoiding me or treating me any different, so it's fine, isn't it? You're okay with it." "I'm..." "Yes?" "Then it's fine," Tony exclaims. "Why'd you need to bring it up?" "Because..." because Steve's really lousy at words when it's not the safety of the world at stake. Tony, it's because I'm trying. Fuck. Ooh, Tony says, almost on automatic. Bad word. Steve gives in. He lets the want flood him, propelling him forward and up in Tony's space. Hands on Tony's face while Tony's eyes startle wide. Steve hangs there just a second to let Tony get what's happening, and then kisses him. It's a solid press of the lips, leaving no doubt as to his intentions. Yeah, Tony says against Steve's mouth. Steve pulls back, ready to apologize. What? Tony's eyes are wide and stunned as they stare up into Steve's. Steve braces himself for a push, but instead Tony's fingers claw up Steve's arms to his shoulders, to his neck, where the blunt fingernails dig into skin. What? Yeah, Steve says. Tony surges forward, his mouth finding Steve's. He kisses like a man starving, his fingers tight at the back of Steve's head. It's great. It's frantic and messy, their mouths sliding against each other and limbs knocking together, which may not be romantic, but hell if it's not a damned rush. Steve's body is singing, the tension finally gaining an outlet in Tony's body and in the mirror of Tony's responses. Tony's even still talking between kisses. Oh my God. What? Oh my God. Oh my God. The words breathless and desperate. Steve's jaw aches at how deep Tony is kissing him, tongue curling daringly against Steve's teeth. A decent response would be to nudge Tony back against the couch. So Steve does that, which is especially good because it gives Steve leverage to properly touch Tony, palms moving over everything he can reach, hips and sides and arms, and learn how solid he is. Very solid and very lovely. Tony's arms are around Steve's shoulders as though he cannot bear the idea of any space between their bodies. His legs come up, the right hooking around Steve's waist, before the left follows, and that's... wow. Tony's legs are around him, and that's the sexiest fucking thing. Steve pauses, forehead pressed to Tony's as he pants. Oh my God, Tony says. Is that for me? Please say that's for me. Tony grinds against him. Steve didn't even realize he was hard, but that is indeed an erection, throbbing insistently against the back of Tony's thigh. That's for you, Steve says hoarsely. Oh my God. Tony's legs tighten, the delicious grip sending a pulse of pleasure rushing down Steve's spine. Give it. Let me have it. Let me, Steve, please. Yes. Yes, whatever you want. In theory, they could have sex right then and there. But that would be rude to their still-missing teammates, so they arrive to the unanimous decision to move, run, elsewhere, in this case Steve's room, since it's closer. Once inside, Tony crowds him up against the wall, knees knocking Steve's and eyes wild where they roam over Steve's face. It worked. I had a plan. I executed it, and it worked. Not the way you thought it would, Steve says. Doesn't matter, still worked. Tony brings his hands to frame Steve's face, fingertips moving over Steve's forehead and cheeks. You know what I was doing? Yeah, Steve darts in, taking another kiss as he puts his hands on Tony's collarbone, then pushes them back to nudge Tony's jacket off. Tony hums, arms flexing to help the jacket on its downward trajectory. The soft flop of the jacket landing is a jolt, too. Tony. Steve hisses at the drag of Tony's hands up his chest, thumbs finding his nipples. Tony, I hope you know that this is... that I know, Tony says, mouth warm against Steve's chin. You're you. I get it. Now, if you'll excuse me... Tony sinks down to his knees. Steve's breath catches and it takes him a second to remember to help out, fumbling with his belt while Tony works at the buttons. Tony moves efficiently, pulling Steve's pants down to his knees and then pushing the hem of his shirt up. Steve helps on that last bit and tugs the whole thing off. Hey. Tony tilts his head, considering, and plants his face on Steve's stomach. What? Steve laughs. Tony rubs his face there, facial hair tickling the surprisingly sensitive skin around Steve's navel. After a second, Steve realizes the sensation is pleasant and curiously pushes his fingers into the hair of Tony's head, noting the difference in texture. Under Steve's hands, Tony tips his head back to look up at him. He's almost glowing, his smile as broad as Steve's ever seen it. "Hi," Steve says. "Oh, right." Tony shakes his head, refocuses, and carefully pulls Steve's underwear out of the way. Steve's erection bobs loose and knocks Tony's nose. Steve almost apologizes, but loses that train of thought when Tony darts his tongue out to swipe it against the head. "Oh." Steve's cock throbs, heavy and insistent, between his legs. It gets harder as Tony strokes it, his grip firm but experimental, thumb dragging deliberately along the vein. Steve can't watch, but he wants to watch, because Tony's latched his lips around the head, somehow grinning as he does so. But if Steve keeps watching, he's going to shoot off in no time. But that could be a good thing. Steve forces his eyes closed, only to drag them back open. Tony's hands stroke up and down Steve's thighs and around his knees to the sensitive skin behind. Light tugging pressure has Steve leaning forward a little, sinking deeper into Tony's mouth. Wet heat surrounds him, and it pulses as Tony sucks. Tony's enthusiasm from earlier is back in the sloppy glide and suction of his lips around Steve's dick, as though it's the best fucking thing in the world to have in his mouth. Of course, Tony would be like this, excited and obscene and beautiful. His hands pump the base of Steve's cock in time to his swallowing around him, and all the while faint gleeful sounds rise from the back of his throat. Steve realizes that he'd love to do this for hours, just stay hard and comfortable with Tony, in his mouth or other places, just to be with him, drawing their arousal sharp and thin to breaking point. All right. So Steve was going to shoot off quick, no matter what. "I'm close," Steve breathes. Tony flits a hand in the air dismissively. "Yeah, whatever." Steve untangles his fingers from Tony's hair, sets them in fists by his side, and gives in. The pleasure in his body narrows down to Tony's mouth, the only place any relief can be found. Steve curses as he comes. Tony is relentless, swallowing with fervor until he's caught all of it, and then gently pulls away to nose around and lap at Steve's balls. A handful of deep breaths get the room to stop spinning. He looks down. It's Steve's turn now. Hey, Tony. Steve tugs at Tony's shoulder, drawing him up to his feet. Tony wipes his mouth with the back of his hand, but there's a second where his lips are parted, and Steve catches a glimpse of cum on Tony's tongue before he swallows. Steve grabs Tony's forearms and shudders. "I want." Steve kicks his pants all the way off and reaches for Tony, plucking at his dress shirt that is disheveled, but not disheveled enough. "Tony." "I don't know," Tony says. "I have lots of things to do, so maybe..." Steve bends his knees, just enough to wrap an arm around Tony's back, pulling him tight against Steve's body and lifting. Tony's face of shocked arousal is more than worth it, and Steve walks them, Tony backward, Steve forward, to the bed, where Steve helpfully tosses Tony onto his back. "Well, fuck," Tony says. "I want to touch." Steve climbs onto the bed, leaning over him. Is it? "Yeah." Tony nods rapidly. "Yeah, go for it. Just a fair warning. I'm not going to last that long either. I mean, I'd like to, but I got the taste of you in my mouth, and that's kind of, yeah." The strain in Tony's pants is picturesque. His cock is packed to the right, and it twitches when Steve puts his hand on it. That's his. That's for him. Tony's hands fall back to the mattress. He's engaged and on edge, but also curious what Steve's going to do. The most obvious tell of his impatience is the way his hips hitch upwards in seek of friction, but Steve stops that with a firm hand on his stomach. Ah, fuck, Tony gasps. Steve opens the bottommost buttons of Tony's shirt, ignores the rest, and shoves the shirt up to his armpits. Tony's pants are open necks, buttons, and the zipper, but Steve only pushes them the minimum amount down his hips so Steve can get his dick out. It's a nice dick, flushed and wet from pre-cum, and curves upward to Tony's stomach when let go. Steve draws back, hands off of Tony, and lets his gaze roam. There's Tony all sprawled out for his sake, naked from the sternum to balls, and panting heavily. Nipples, freckles, scar tissue, and cock. Steve memorizes it all. God, please, Tony gasps. Steve, if you keep doing that, I can't. You can come like this? Steve says in surprise. No, but it's really, really, really very... Tony cries out when Steve wraps a hand around his dick. Steve, please, I need... Steve pumps him root to shiny tip, and slowly at first. His intention isn't to tease, but to watch how Tony's entire body strains for it, the muscles in his thighs and chest and arms working together to push his hips up, driving his cock into the ring of Steve's fingers. It's a clumsy rhythm, made clumsier by his desperation, but he does not change his pose or adjust himself. His focus is on reaching Steve's fist and fucking it. Steve promptly adds another item to the list in his head of things that are very sexy about Tony. Can you come like this? Steve says. Tony shakes his head frantically. It's not... I mean, maybe, but I... Kiss me? Steve lowers himself down. He follows the letter of the request, settling his mouth at Tony's hip, while Tony garble laughs at him. But mercy is also a virtue, so Steve moves, kissing a path up Tony's stomach, through the hair around his navel, and up to his pecs, where he pauses to lave his tongue on a nipple. It's a nice, dusty nipple, and it hardens when Steve suckles it. Tony's laugh takes a sharper edge, and his thrusts into Steve's hand speed up. You asshole, Tony hisses. Son of a bitch, you son of a bitch. Steve raises his head. That's rude. Fuck you. Kiss me. Kiss me. Tony groans when Steve finally moves up and presses their mouths together. Steve kisses him deep and steady and swallows Tony's whimpers as he goes. Tony's relieved to get what he wants, but his breath still comes out in hitches. He is determined to kiss and be kissed, no matter that his coordination is shot, and he's almost wheezing in desperation to come. Okay, okay. Tony pulls his mouth away. His arms finally rise up off the mattress, grabbing at Steve's shoulders and hauling him close. Steve follows his lead, adjusting his knees to stay low and tight against Tony, which happens also to be to his own advantage since it allows him to feel every shake and tremor of Tony's body. Tony buries his face at Steve's neck and clings tight all the way through his orgasm. Oh, it's heady stuff. Tony eventually stops shaking and unpeels himself from Steve, who carefully sets him down. The buzz in Steve's body may be satisfied, but it's still there, and it jolts a little at the sight of Tony's lazy smile. Steve kisses Tony one more time, soft and sweet. Tony kisses him back, but then bats him away. Clean up, he says. They putter around the room. It should be surreal to have Tony in his private space, especially while the both of them are down to their underwear. It is surreal, actually, once Steve thinks about it. But a great deal of his life in recent years has been one surreal thing after another. So why not this? Why not this man who keeps surprising him and helping Steve surprise himself? It's probably endorphins that have Steve very calm and collected as he gets back into bed. He stretches out, propped up on one arm, as he watches Tony unrumple his clothes and semi-properly fold them before tossing them to the side chair. Tony's collected his phone from his jacket and taps through it as he climbs onto the bed and settles down on the mound of pillows next to Steve. Steve considers his options, then plucks Tony's phone from his hands and tosses it away. Tony raises an eyebrow at him. "Oh, I see." "Hi," Steve says. "Hello." Tony sinks into the pillow and mirrors Steve's pose. "How are you?"
"Doing well, actually. Thanks for asking. How about you?"
"Remarkably well, considering I thought I was having an aneurysm about an hour ago."
"Sorry," Steve says ruefully.
"Eh," Tony shrugs. "So, you knew all this time, but were not interested. When did it flip?"
"Last night."
"Last..." Tony gapes at him, then bursts out laughing. "Last night? And you're already..." "Damn, you're easy." "I prefer the term efficient." As Steve studies the minutiae of Tony's oh-so-pleased expression to his heart's content, it occurs to him that the coil of expectation in his belly is still there. A part of it gained relief in the sex, but that was just part of it, that first bolt off the starting line. But this is a long-haul marathon, of which this expectation, this want, will remain a steady companion. Another due north, to use a certain fellow's parlance. It's exciting. The more so because Steve's been enthralled by the new journey that Tony's on, and now he gets to be a part of that, right there with him.
"I knew what you were doing," Steve says. "It was very brave."
"Side project," Tony says airily. "I was working on the team anyway, so why not try this, too?"
"Tony, listen."
Steve shuffles closer and draws a thumb in a delicate line across Tony's cheekbone. Tony goes very still, though there is effort in the way he tries to return Steve's steady gaze. "It was very brave of you, all of it. I don't know if I could ever be that brave." Tony starts to protest, but Steve sets his fingertips on Tony's mouth. "You inspire me."
"Okay, no."
Tony draws away, seems to think better of it, and shimmies down a little to press his face against Steve's chest. Steve immediately puts his arms around him, holding Tony tight.
"I can't handle this right now," Tony says, muffled. "I think about you all the time. What it would be like to be so sure of things the way you are."
"But I'm not sure about things."
Tony sighs.
"Yeah, I'm getting that. You smell nice, by the way. Like vanilla and freedom."
"Thanks."
Steve buries his smile in Tony's hair. "But really, thank you for everything."
"Just returning the favor, Steve."
The end.